Beamy, 22, uni student, part-time barista. I've always been the type to laugh at guys who talk about being lonely. To me, it sounded pathetic. Like women deal with real problems every day. Safety, harassment, expectations, and men want sympathy because no one texts them back. Please. Whenever the topic came up, I'd roll my eyes and say the same thing. If men are lonely, that's their fault. So last week in class, we were on a break, sitting in the common area. One of the guys in my program brought up this article about the male loneliness epidemic. He said it with this dramatic sigh, like it was supposed to shock us. A couple of the other girls leaned in, all concerned, but I just laughed. Men are always saying they're lonely? They never open up because they want us to do the emotional labor for them. If they're quiet, that's their choice. Honestly, I just assume they're fine. If they wanted to talk, they would. The guy frowned and said something about suicide stats, about how men don't have outlets. But I rolled my eyes. Incels cry about not getting dates, and suddenly it's a crisis? Give me a break. Everyone laughed with me. Felt like I won the debate right there. Thing is, I've always thought men exaggerate their pain. Scroll through any forum and you'll see the same thing. Guys posting about how women don't want them, how they're invisible, how they're done with dating. To me, it's just whining. If you want a girlfriend, get your act together. If you're sad, go to therapy. Don't dump your issues online and expect sympathy. And I always had an example ready to prove my point. And my dad, Evan, 54, works nights at the water treatment plant. He's the most solid, reliable man I know. Doesn't complain, doesn't get angry, doesn't fall apart. He just keeps going. When Mom left, and yeah, she cheated before the divorce, I know that much. He never even trashed her. She cheated with someone he knew, a guy from his shift at the plant. They'd worked side by side for years. That part always bothered me more than the divorce itself. It wasn't just her leaving, it was her choosing someone who ate lunch with him every day. He just took it, signed the papers, and handled everything. She passed away a few years later from a stroke, but even before that, she left him saddled with debts they'd taken out together. Credit cards, medical bills. He could have dumped it all, but he didn't. He's still paying them off. Before all that, Dad used to be louder. He'd invite the neighbors for barbecues, watch football with his co-workers. After the divorce, he stopped. No more people over. No more laughing loud in the living room. Just working home, like someone flipped a switch. But he seemed fine to me, though. Never saw him crying or whining about anything. So that's the thing about Dad. He never breaks. I use him all the time as my go-to example whenever guys start whining about their struggles. Like, look at my dad. Mom cheated on him. Left him with debt. He raised me basically alone. He still goes to work every night, cooks, cleans, pays bills. And you know what? He doesn't sit online crying about being lonely. He doesn't complain about dating being unfair. He just gets on with it. And honestly, I don't even think his life is that hard. Yeah, he works nights, but it's not like he's breaking his back in construction or in some mine. He just monitors tanks, checks numbers, watches machines, pushes buttons at a plant. Honestly, I don't think it's that hard. He just makes it sound harder than it is because he's tired all the time. Sometimes I'll come downstairs late at night and there'll be a plate waiting for me. Scrambled eggs or reheated pasta, covered with foil and a sticky note on top. Kiddo. That's all he ever writes. Just kiddo. No heart, no love you, nothing. I used to laugh at it, show my friends pictures like, look how weird my dad is. But the food was always warm, and if I forgot to thank him, he never said a word. He'd just keep doing it, like clockwork. He had other habits too. Every Saturday, he'd poke his head into my room and ask if I wanted to grab burgers with him. Sometimes, he'd tack on an errand. Need to run to the hardware store. You want to ride along? Half the time, I said no. I was busy, out with friends, swamped with assignments. He never pushed, just nodded and went on his own. At the time, I thought it was nice he gave me space. Now I wonder if it was something else. One evening, he handed me this flyer he'd picked up at the library. A men's shed group. Woodworking, trivia nights, board games. He said, might be fun. I laughed right in his face. What, like a dad club? He didn't argue, just folded it neatly and slipped it into his back pocket, like maybe he'd known my answer before I gave it. Once, when I was rushing out the door to meet friends, he said something that threw me for a second. Not with weight, not like a confession. Just tossed it out like he was asking about the weather. Ever feel like people don't need you anymore? I laughed. You're being dramatic, old man. He smiled a little, waved me off, and that was that. Later that night, in our group chat, I told the story, but not the way he meant it. I turned it into a punchline. My dad's so dramatic, he literally said, "Do you ever feel like people don't need you anymore? Like, bro, you're not some sad Reddit guy. You have a job, you have a kid, you're fine." Everyone dropped laughing emojis. One girl even wrote, "Men always want pity for existing." That was the way I always framed him. Not as a man carrying silent weight, but as proof that men who complain online are just exaggerating. My dad had every reason to fold. Cheated on, divorced, working nights, paying off debt, but he never cried about it. He just kept going. So whenever guys brought up loneliness, I'd say, "Please." My dad's living proof, men are fine. They just want attention. That's what I believed. That's what made what happened later so impossible to understand. A few nights after I joked about his dramatic line, Dad poked his head into my room like he did most Saturdays. "Kiddo, you free? There's a new burger place on 5th. Wanna go? Could be nice to..." He started. At that exact moment, I'd been hitting a deadline and my patience was already thin. I was up, sleep-deprived, annoyed about a stupid group project that disappeared into chaos. His face looked hopeful, an expression I didn't want to deal with, so I snapped. "Can you stop? Seriously, you need to get a life. I've got work, school, everything. I can't drop everything to be your social calendar, okay?" I hated saying it, but the words slipped out sharp. He went still, like I'd slapped him, and for a second, I felt kind of proud of the burn I gave him. He didn't push back. He just nodded and walked away. After he left, I told myself later, in the car on the way to my shift, that he'd get over it. He always did. He's Evan. He handles things. Move on. Except the house felt different the next morning. There were more envelopes on the counter than usual. I'd seen them before. Mortgage stuff, utilities. But now a small white envelope sat half open with a notice tucked inside. I flicked it closed and put it back, trying not to look. Bills had always been his thing, his quiet chore. I didn't want to add my 2 cents to it. He'd said it didn't matter. 2 nights later, something happened that stuck with me. I woke up at 1 in the morning craving a glass of water. When I shuffled downstairs barefoot, I saw him sitting at the kitchen table with the light over his head on, not the low TV glow like always. He'd made himself a thermos of coffee and the dog was at his feet. He didn't hear me. He was talking to someone. I froze at the doorway because I recognized the voice. It was Oscar, one of Dad's younger co-workers from the plant. I'd met him once before when I dropped by with takeout for Dad. Nice enough guy, maybe late 30s, quiet, but respectful. Oscar was in a flannel, leaning forward like he'd been there a while. He was talking like he hadn't realized I was home. I would have slipped back upstairs, but now I was stuck eavesdropping like some creep. Oscar said, "You sure you don't want to come to the pub next week? A few of the guys will be there. It's not the same without you." Dad laughed, but it wasn't a real laugh. "Nah, I'm okay. Don't want to bother anyone." Oscar tried again. "You ever think about trying the apps?" Couldn't hurt. His tone was light, casual. Dad shook his head. "Nah, I don't want to be the guy who's always asking. People move on quick now. They want the top guys, you know? Younger fellas, better hours. It's hard to compete when you're..." He trailed off, staring at the table. Oscar shifted uncomfortably. "I get that. It's rough. I'm not in the best spot either, Evan. But dude, you should come out. You can't just..." Dad cut him off. "I made sure the house is paid off for her. That stuff won't fall on her. I keep things sorted. I don't want to mess her life up with my noise." He said my name softly then, like he was rehearsing it. "Maybe I take a long trip, see some places. Maybe I'll slow down a bit." Slow down. Long trip. The words sat heavy, but I brushed them off in the moment. Men say stuff when they're tired. They don't mean it. Still, hearing him sound like the guys I used to mock, invisible, resigned, like the world had passed him by, didn't line up with the version of him I'd always told myself was unshakable. Oscar stood and rested a hand on Dad's shoulder. "If you ever want to swing by on a Friday, we'll be there. No pressure. Don't go disappearing, man." Dad gave a small chuckle. "I won't. Thanks, Oscar. I crept back upstairs, heart pounding. In the morning, I told myself I'd misheard. Just late-night griping. Nothing more. But the part about the house being paid off and not wanting to mess my life up kept replaying in my head. The next day at breakfast, Dad told me straight, "Kiddo, just so you know, I'll be gone for about a week. Work trip, some maintenance downstate. Don't worry, fridge is stocked, bills are covered. You'll be fine." I barely looked up from my phone. "Yeah, that's fine. Have fun with it." I thought it was nice he told me, but didn't connect it with his long trip comment. I was chilling after that, happy I had the house to myself. Until a full day later, more than 24 hours after he left, my phone buzzed while I was drafting an email to my professor. It was Oscar. His voice was clipped, urgent. "You need to call your dad. The plant's looking for him. He didn't come in after lunch." Confused, I laughed nervously. "Wait, what? I thought you guys were on a work trip." Oscar was quiet for a beat. "What work trip?" "There's nothing scheduled. He told you." "That?" My stomach twisted. "Yeah, he said he'd be gone for a week." Oscar swore under his breath. "Then we've got a problem. He didn't show up. Evan never just disappears. We're trying to reach him." I hung up and immediately called Dad. Voicemail, texted, nothing. By dinner, there was a knock at the door. Two police officers. Calm voices, but sharp questions. "When was the last time you saw him? Did he seem upset? Any recent changes in his routine? Bills? Sleep? Health?" Behind them, Oscar and a supervisor from the plant waited, their faces grim. One of the officers said carefully, "His truck was found at a turnout by the old reservoir." "We're still searching." There was a note in the glove compartment. My chest tightened. The word "note" echoed like a gunshot. I blurted out, "Wait, so is he dead? Did you find him?" The officer's face stayed professional, but his pause told me more than I wanted to know. "We haven't recovered anyone yet. The search is ongoing." Oscar's jaw clenched. "Come with me," he said quietly. "You shouldn't be here alone." I let him lead me to his car without thinking. The drive was silent at first, just the hum of the engine and my hands shaking in my lap. Finally, I whispered, "Oscar, just tell me the truth. Do you think he's alive?" He didn't answer right away. His knuckles tightened on the wheel. "We're hoping. But Evan left a note." "You know what that means?" I felt my throat close. "No. He wouldn't. He wouldn't leave me like that?" Oscar's voice softened. "He talked about you all the time. Said you were the reason he kept showing up. But lately, he's been saying he couldn't keep up anymore. Hours getting cut, younger guys promoted over him, bills stacking up. And him trying to date? He said it was like being invisible. Women only wanted guys with money and free time. He said he was too tired to compete." I stared out the window, throat dry. The words didn't sound like the dad I thought I knew, but they matched the man I'd overheard two nights ago. The man I'd laughed at. "Didn't you see it?" Oscar asked. Not harsh, just baffled. He looked worn down every day. "We tried to pull him out with us, but he wouldn't come. Said he didn't want to bother anyone. Said you had your own life." I swallowed hard. "He never told me. He acted like everything was fine." Oscar shook his head. "That's the thing. Guys like him don't say it straight. They show you in the little stuff. When they stop laughing, when they stop showing up, when they sit quiet at the end of the table. You think silence means strength, but half the time, it means they've got nothing left to say." I wanted to argue, to tell him he was wrong, but the image of Dad sitting at the kitchen table with the TV on low flashed through my mind. The foil-covered plates, the flyers I'd mocked, the way he'd asked me about burgers like it was a lifeline. Oscar's hands tightened on the wheel. "You know, he covered for me once. Took a double shift so I could take my kid to the doctor. Never asked for anything back. That's who he was. Always giving, never asking. But people like that, they burn out. Especially when they're alone." As he drove us closer to the reservoir, I realized I wasn't heading to bring Dad home. I was heading to the place he chose to leave me behind. Blue lights flickered ahead, cruisers lined the shoulder, and search crews swept the dark water with flashlights. Oscar parked a little ways back. "Stay here," he said, but my hand was already on the door. My legs moved on autopilot, gravel crunching under my shoes as I stumbled closer. An officer stopped me gently. "Miss, we're still searching. You can't..." I cut him off, voice cracking. "Did you find him? Just tell me, is he..." The officer's face didn't change, but the hesitation in his eyes was louder than words. We recovered his jacket near the water. We're expanding the search radius now. I felt the ground tilt. My ears rang like someone had fired a gun next to my head. I wanted to scream, to insist they were wrong, that this wasn't real. They led me to a patrol car, where another officer handed me a clear plastic evidence bag. Inside was a folded piece of paper. My heart froze. The handwriting was his. Blocky, deliberate, just a few lines. Don't carry more than I did. I love you. Tucked in the fold, almost as an afterthought, was a second scrap. One word. The same word he'd left on all those foil-covered plates. Kiddo. It gutted me more than the first note. All the times I'd mocked it, sent pictures of it to friends like it was some silly quirk. And now it was the last thing he left me. I choked out, This isn't my fault. He was fine. He never said anything. Men deal with worse all the time. He was strong. He never broke. I heard myself rambling, desperate, as if saying it enough would make it true. Oscar stood beside me, silent for a long beat. Then he said, low and steady, You think he didn't say it? He's been saying it for years. You just didn't want to hear it. I whipped my head toward him. Don't put this on me. His expression was tired, pained. I'm not. I'm telling you the truth. He asked you to get burgers. He handed you that flyer. He stayed up waiting just so you'd have food when you came home. That was him saying it. Every single time. And you laughed, I wanted to argue, to tear him apart, to find some hole in what he was saying. But all I could picture was my dad standing in the kitchen under that single light, voice soft as he said, Maybe I take a long trip. The night air was cold, the kind that makes your lungs ache. Around us, officers' voices crackled over radios, but all I heard was the echo of that one word, kiddo, bouncing around in my skull like a curse. I sank onto the hood of Oscar's car, note clutched in my hand, and for the first time it hit me that silence isn't strength. Sometimes it's just the sound of someone drowning where you refuse to look. It's been 3 years. I graduated, moved to a different city, rent my own apartment now. On paper, life looks fine. Work, bills, brunch with friends, the usual. People tell me I'm doing well. I nod and smile, but I still think about him every day. The house was sold not long after, most of his things packed away. I kept one box, not the photo albums, not the furniture, just the little stuff. The notes, those yellow sticky squares that only ever said one word, kiddo. I keep them in my desk drawer. Sometimes I take them out, line them up in order. They look so small, so meaningless, but now they feel heavier than anything I own. Oscar came to the funeral. He's the one who helped me sort through the utilities, the paperwork, things I never realized Dad had been carrying alone. For a while he'd check in on me, text to make sure I was eating, that I wasn't drowning. I always told him I was fine. Maybe I was, maybe I wasn't. I can't say I've had some big revelation. I still get irritated when men online complain about loneliness. Part of me still thinks a lot of them exaggerate. But another part of me. It hesitates now. Every time I see a post like that, I hear my dad's voice asking if I want burgers. I see him folding that flyer into his pocket after I laughed. I remember the jacket they found at the reservoir. I guess that's the part that hurts the most. Not knowing how many times he tried to say something and I just didn't hear it. Or maybe I heard it and didn't care enough to listen. People ask sometimes if I regret it. I never know what to answer. Regret feels too easy, like it would fix something. The truth is simpler and harder. I miss him. And no matter how much time passes, I'll never get another kiddo waiting for me on the counter.